In the next session, we'll talk about the new so-called model binding features that Microsoft is going to introduce in ASP.NET 4.5. And maybe first kind of warning, if you have used ASP.NET MVC before, what I'm going to show you will be very familiar, because you could almost say what they first did implement solely in ASP.NET MVC, they now like backported in a slightly different way, but they did backport it inside web forms. So that there you can also do what is called model binding. So some things, a lot of things will then be very familiar if you have used ASP.NET MVC before. First, you could say we'll just talk about the so-called strongly typed data controls, which is an enhancement to the template controls, like a grid, for instance, or the form view, to do basically strongly typed data binding. And then we're going to cover one by one, basically, the model binding features, first for just retrieving some data out of the database. We'll introduce the concept of a value provider, again, which you have in ASP.NET MVC. We'll also talk about the updating of data, inserts, updates, and deletes, and the validation with the model state. And then the last, if you want to implement like custom validation together with the model binding features, well, you might have used, for instance, Silverlight or WPF, and then you know about these data annotation attributes. While these data annotation attributes for instance, implementing validation can now also be used inside ASP.NET web forms. But to see a little bit where we are, well, currently, if you are working in ASP.NET 4.0 and you want to do data binding, well, for quite a while, you could say Microsoft has controls like a repeater, a grid view, and so on, in which you can define templates and say, well, what should the template render? Well, for instance, a label displaying, again, a category name and a description. And to then provide the data binding values, well, if you want to do read-only data binding, you have the weakly typed eval function, in which you just say, hey, I have this field in my data source called category name. And if you make a typing mistake, well, too bad, you're out of luck. Your compiler will not catch it. You can't say, well, this category name property, maybe on a category class, where is it defined? If he would try to go to Go definition, he would actually end up on the string class, because he thinks you wrote a string there. So there is no runtime checking on these expressions. You can't go to the source model. There is no IntelliSense. And that's, you could say, a kind of first new thing that did change in ASP.NET 4.5, where there, if you have controls that do support template data binding, well, they have a new property called model type, by which you basically say, well, this control is going to display this particular instance of a class, like a product class, a category class. And then when you're writing your templates, he will provide you, well, either with an item property in the IntelliSense or a bind property that supports full IntelliSense, that supports compile time checking, where you can even right-click on it and say, go to the definition. So if I would like implement, let's say, one page, and let me just say, web form at the, let's call it, oh, that was not what I wanted. Rename the page called products.aspx. And if you say, well, in there I need a grid, now to not bother you with typing in all the HTML, I have some HTML code snippets like the grid view products. Come on, grid view products. Top. And basically what it just adds, let's say, is a grid view, an ID, run at server. Very simple. It defines the columns. I have two columns, template field, template field, where the first one would just be rendered as a hyperlink. The second column will be a checkbox called discontinued. And we want to bind a list of, you could say, product objects to this grid. Well, I don't have a product class yet, so add me a class that I would call products. And that class will just construct or be composed of a collection of properties. So also there, I have the product snippet, where you can say a product has an ID, a name, a unit price, a URL, discontinued. To actually express that this is my key, let me add the key attribute already. That attribute is not yet known because it resides in the system.componentModel.dataAnnotations namespace. Ultimately, when we're talking about doing insert updates later, SQL Server is actually going to generate that ID. It's an identity field. So I can basically select the DB generated, and then you have the enumeration database generated options dot identity. Ultimately, in SQL Server, this is an identity field. The class, it's not yet entirely finished, but I at least have the skeleton of my class. Let me copy the namespace. And if I now go to the ASPX page itself, well, the template controls now have a property called model type. Now, what are you going to display in there? Well, webform session.model.products. And you could say sometimes it takes a little bit of time, but if you say in here in my hyperlink, I need the name of a product to be displayed, well, smaller than percent, and then in here, let's say they do provide here now a strongly typed property called item, which is basically built by looking at whatever you have set the model type property to. So item is of type product, and it provides you again in full IntelliSense discontinued product ID, product name, product URL, unit price. So if I say here unit price, same thing for the values inside my attributes. There may be a URL has to be retrieved, well, a data binding expression, where I would say like item dots, and then we have the product URL. Products can be discontinued. You could say a simple checkbox, ID discontinued, run at server, checked. Well, again, there, data binding expression where we use the item property to say, well, bind it to that field called discontinued. Also, when I like right-click, for instance, here on product name, and so like go to definition, well, it actually jumps back to the file in which that property in my product class has been defined. Okay, so there's compile time checking. You can go, you can say F12, go to the definition of that property when you do the data binding. To actually write a little bit of code to access the database, let me add quickly one more class. Well, I will just be accessing the Northwind database, so a class Northwind context, which will inherit from the DB context base class resolve, and this will just have one single property. It should just expose the products, so a property of the type DB set of product objects, and we'll give it a name products. There is one extra thing I still have to do to be able to access my SQL Server, because in my web.config here, I did already define a connection string. It's called Northwind, pointing to my SQL Server Northwind database. Well, I must still tell my context to use that connection string to communicate with SQL Server. One way of doing that is that I add in here a constructor in which I'll basically just call the base constructor. base and just hard coded pass in here the name of the connection string he should use. In my case, that name was Northwind build. And at least when we're ready for the first demo, he knows we can use this class Northwind context to get our list of products and maybe filter, sort, edit it, and so on. So this is just some, you could say, ADO.NET code that I quickly added in here. Okay. And so you could say, like, you have the item property when you combined with the model type. Next, if that's for later, if you want to do two-way data binding, where you actually want to modify the data that you display, and then you use the bound item property, and this provides you with two-way data binding from the source to the controls, and from the controls back to the source, whatever the source might be. Now, you could say with with the model binding functionality that I already said originally appeared in ASP.NET MVC, well, basically, that kind of backport into ASP.NET Web Forms. And also, for quite a while, you could say, ASP.NET has had this concept of an object data source. But there still, you would have to write quite some extra code to let the object source talk to your custom classes and then bind the object data source to the different controls on which the data had to be displayed. So here, it's a little bit of unification of both worlds. In that sense, if we now want to tell our grid, well, hey, you have to retrieve some data from somewhere, while a templated control, like a grid, has a new property, and let me press enter here, that is called the select method. And basically there you have to tell the grid, well, what method should you call to actually retrieve the data? And I could add a method like getProducts. And that's the method he would then use. Let me also say auto-generate columns to false. I don't need this. Let me also say data key names. Well, it's the product ID field that identifies all my products unique. And then I still need to implement that getProducts. Currently, there is still a limitation in ASP.NET 4.5. that this method must go into my page. You cannot say currently, well, I have somewhere a class that implements a method called getProducts. You go out control, instantiate an instance of that class, and call the getProducts method over there. That is planned for the next beta or whatever it will be called version of Visual Studio 11. Currently, it must go into the page itself. If I take my products page, the code beside file, and in here, I basically have to write a method that will return an IEnumerable or an IQueryable of something, IQueryable of product objects. And then we'll call it just getProducts. Same name as we wrote in the select method attribute. The only thing I really have to do in here is like Northwind, or create the Northwind context. Its namespace is not yet known. So let me resolve North. Oh, I forgot the W. Northwind context resolve. And then CTX is equal to new Northwind context. The only thing it exposes is the products DB sets. Let's say by default my data should be sorted, for instance, on the name of the product. So I'll write a lambda expression, say like, hey, I sort it on the product name. I'll assign that to a variable of that data type, IQueryable of products. Of products. And let's call that variable query. And then we'll just return that one for the moment, like this. So that's my implementation of getProducts, where we just go out, retrieve the data, sort it from SQL Server. And this, you could say, what it returns is not the result of the query. He returns an IQueryable of product. which means we actually return an expression tree to our grid view. And the grid view, at a necessary moment in time, will then actually use the context to open the connection to the SQL server, execute the query with the order by in there, get the data, and bind it. And there is no need to explicitly call the data bind method on the grid anymore. Basically, that happens automatically during the life cycle of the execution of this page. So if I would like to give this a first shot, like view in browser, and you see a rather large list of products that we retrieve sorted by name. Imagine that you say for things like paging, sorting, well, again, I could go to my grid and say like, well, we're going to allow sorting, true, and allow paging, true, and then we'll say like the page size is 5, for instance. I'm not going to make it too big to keep the page small on this resolution. There is one more thing. If I want to enable the sorting, and if I want to be able to click on product name, that he then has to know to sort on that one, well, I will actually have to set the sort expression to product name. I will have template here have to set the sort expression to like discontinued. Voila. Built. And if I go back to my page and say run this, well, for the rest, you didn't need to implement anything else because, again, the grid at a necessary moment in time calls my get products method. You could say your query is now expanded. Yeah, your query is now expanded so that if you click on the name of a column, he will sort on that column and discontinued, sort me on discontinued. And in case you wonder, who is doing the sorting? Well, it's SQL Server who is doing the sorting. If you use the SQL Server profiler, you can clearly see this. Same thing if you start paging. It is SQL Server who does the paging, who says, retrieve me a page size of 5 starting from this position. If you click next, SQL Server basically says, the next 5 records starting from that position have to be retrieved. It's not done on the client, not done in the ASP.NET pages itself. So basically what I did, you could say defined the model type on the grid. Then I used the strongly typed item or bind item to express my data binding. I had to write a method here called getProducts that returns either an IEnumerable or IQueryable object. And then it basically just worked. Now, you could say, well, what if that grid should not display all the records that I have in my in my database in SQL Server? Well, you have this concept, again, coming from MVC, called value providers, which will basically, you could say, using dependency injection, inject the necessary values, if possible, in, for instance, the parameters that you provide in your retrieval methods. So if I would say, for instance, well, in my products.aspx, I would like to be able to retrieve products that have a certain name in their string, well, I could define a first parameter called string, where I say, well, that one is called, just call it product substring. Maybe another one. That is called, that's actually a nullable boolean, where you say like discontinued. And then the question becomes, but these two parameters, where do they get their value from? Well, I haven't written that part of the user interface yet. But if I go to my products page, you could say, well, maybe on top of the grids, we provide a kind of filter panel. So, again, I have a snippet for this, the filter panel snippet. where basically I just displays a panel where it says, well, please enter a part of your product name. And there is the text box explicitly called product name text box. The other label says, I only want to see discontinued products. And that checkbox is explicitly called discontinued checkbox, and then a button for the filtering. Now, in the older way of working, in ASP.NET Web Forms was, well, I could handle the click event, retrieve the values of my two controls, product name text box, discontinued text box, and then basically query SQL Server all again and do the data binding all again. But with this, with these built-in so-called value providers, you can actually place additional attributes on the parameters of my getProducts method. Where, first of all, in ASP.NET, they added the new namespace system, .web, .model binding. And in there, they, for instance, did add attributes like control to say, well, this parameter will actually get its value from a control with a specific name. And if you're like, you could say lazy, or if you want to be consistent, if the parameter name and the name of the control is exactly the same, this would work. Now, in my case, I explicitly gave it another name, and then you must say what control has to be used to inject the value into that product substring variable. So let me quickly take a peek. And that's product name text box. And then product name text box. Same thing for the Boolean. We have the control attribute again that can basically inject the value of a control into that variable. And the name of the control, let me copy it again, product.aspx, here discontinued checkbox, and move and copy. Besides, you could say these two, Microsoft also made some other attributes available. Let me just write here, comma. You could say, well, maybe you need to retrieve something out of the query string, as the query string value provider. Maybe you need to retrieve something out of a cookie, and there is the cookie value provider. And if the place from which you would like to provide a value to one of your parameters is not built in, you will see in a moment that it is actually quite easy to extend and write additional value providers in here. Once I have this, there is one more thing to do. You could say we now know whether we want to search for discontinued products, whether we want to search for all products or only products containing a certain string. What is basically left is to, you could say, modify my query, add some additional where clauses to it. So if not, well, string dot is null or empty, well, if we actually pass something in product substring, well, at that moment in time, query is equal to query dot where. And again, we say, like, look, please give me only those products where the product name contains, for instance, the substring that is in this variable, product substring. Close. Built. And the same thing for the checkbox. You could say if the checkbox actually has a value, it could be null, that nothing is provided. So we'll first check like if the discontinued, if it has a value. And then you could say, well, if the value, this is, for instance, true, just going to hard code this, well, then I only want to see those products that are actually discontinued. So query is equal to query dot where we say like p over p dot discontinued. Well, they must all be discontinued products. And then we chain these operators together. Again, it's not a query, but an expression tree that is created. That expression tree is handed over to my grids, who at the necessary moment in time You could say talk to the Northwind context. Expression tree with all the operators in there is converted into a SQL statement. And again, that SQL statement goes out. SQL does the filtering. SQL does the sorting and returns the data to me and then bound to the particular grid. Built. And then let me first refresh the page. So if you say, well, for instance, show me all products that have the, let's say like, what can I take? AN as a string in it. Well, then only those products will be retrieved. You see the list is much smaller. If you say, well, they should also be discontinued, well, then there are only three products that meet that condition. So these value providers that I now provide in ASP.NET web forms are used to like inject the values from somewhere, controls, session object, cookie, the query string into the parameters in here. And the only thing you still have to do is build, you could say, your expression tree and hand it over to the control itself. And like I said, if the built-in value providers like query string, cookie, the form values, or the session object, if they're not sufficient, well, it's actually quite easy to build your own custom value providers. If you look at how I use my value provider, well, it's an attribute that you place on a parameter. And now behind that attribute, there is the real value provider. And a value provider is just a class that needs to implement the iValue provider interface. And in there, you write your value logic. So let me add in my project, maybe quickly in here, add another new class. Let's say like, let's call it role value provider dot cs. And again, I have a small snippet for this, the role value provider. And basically, like I said, it's just a class that you implement that must inherit from iValue provider, resolve. In which, you'll see that why that is in a moment, you provide a constructor with two parameters like the HTTP context base. And what my value provider is going to do ultimately, I want it to be able to look at what Windows group am I in and check, for instance, am I an administrator, yes or no. So he must check if I'm part of a certain group. That's why I have here a second, you could say, more regular parameter in which I pass in the name of the Windows group. This is just stored in an internal field here, private string role name. You could say during the execution of the value provider, you might need access to your HTTP application, the request object, the response object, session object, cookies and so on. Well, that's basically provided by that first parameter here, HTTP context base. If you would just look there in the IntelliSense, your application object, your cache on the list just goes on. The error object is all at your availability in case you need it for the implementation of your value provider. And then the real work of the value provider is done in this method called getValue, where, let me do one more resolve, where basically in my case, I'm going to say, well, yeah, who am I? What is my user account that I use to log on to the website? And I get back, in my case, a Windows principal object that identifies my Windows account. You could say, I'm just going to check, am I authenticated? Am I indeed a Windows principal? Windows authentication is turned on the website, so this should be okay. And then we're just going to check, well, hey, the current user requesting the page, is he in this role, for instance, called administrator? And then we need to provide the value back to our parameter ultimately. So here, at the end, you must return a value provider result object. And if you create such an object, basically in the constructor, you pass in three parameters, like what I call the raw value, always of type object, a string, the attempted value, in case some conversion failed, but you can still provide a string value back. And then the last one, system.globalization.cultureinfo, because maybe the way you retrieve a value depends on certain regional settings, like how numbers or dates are formatted. Well, then you can pass back the culture info object that was used to retrieve the value. This, and then culture info resolve and globalization. Now, if you look at this, this is just a class that implements an interface. This is not an attribute. So this class, well, we can't place it on a parameter in getProducts as a method to inject the value in there. You actually need a second thing, and that's an attribute. An attribute that will basically be responsible for creating an instance of my custom value provider, calling ultimately getValue on it, and then providing the value back to whatever parameter I might put it on in my method definition, getProducts. So that's the last class, add new item. And let's say, we'll just call this one the role attribute. And also in there, it's, you could say, a class you need to write that inherits from the role value provider attribute. Let's say role value provider attribute. So basically, because you typically put those only on parameters, there is a restriction on the attribute to say you can only place this attribute on a parameter. Like I said, you need to inherit from the value provider source attribute, and in there you have to overwrite the get value provider, because that's basically the place where you will create your role value provider that I wrote and return it. And the infrastructure of ASP.NET will basically call the get value method on this object, extract the value out, whether I'm part of a certain group, yes or no. And the reason why, if I go back, I had in the constructor this parameter and the name of the role for which I would like to check in there is basically in the attribute itself, while we pass the current HTTP context under which the request is being executed to the value provider. He might need it. And we pass, of course, the name of the role to the value provider that he should check for if we're a part of. And once that is finished and my class is called role attribute, well, I could, for instance, in my page, say, well, let's add a third parameter, and that is has a role attribute on it, where you could say, well, that role must be, for instance, you must be built in. And then / built-in Jurgen administrators to just check if you're a member of the local administrators group. I could call this one bool ? Is user admin or something like that. And again, he sees the attribute, instantiates the attribute creates the value provider. Get value is called on the value provider, value of boolean, true, false, I'm part or I'm not part of that group is returned, and that value is, you could say, injected into my boolean property, is user admin. The only thing I shouldn't forget, but if I could say again, is user admin, if it has a value, and for instance, if user admin, if the value is, for instance, well, false, you're not an administrator, let's quickly do it this way, well then query is equal to query.where, where maybe you only want to retrieve like the cheap products, you say like P over P dot unit price must be smaller than, well, let's say 10, like this. And so you just chain all these together, you build up your expression tree, and again, you return your expression tree. Let's give this a try. Now, I shouldn't notice anything different when I run this and this way, because I'm an administrator. That's what I use to log on to my PC, and I still see like the full range of products. However, if I would quickly say like here, if I am an admin, if that is true, and build and request the page again, well, you see that the list is much more limited, and because now we basically say administrators can only see the cheap products. Before we move over to like how you can actually modify data with the model binding system of ASP.NET Web Forms, you could say, well, in the grids you are displaying, well, you're just displaying like a limited subset of the fields. So you have product name, discontinued. Well, maybe you want to be able to select here an individual product and then see it more in details in a form view at the bottom. Well, let me go to Visual Studio again. Source. So we have the panel. Let me collapse this one. We have the grids. Let me collapse this one. And then the last code snippet, form view products, top, top. And again, it just has an ID, form view product, run at server. The model type is already set to say, well, hey, you are going to data bind against product objects. And then you have basically three templates. You have like the empty data templates in case you want to do the inserts, the insert template. And in case you want to do edits, and the edit templates. And here in terms of the data binding expressions, there is a small, you could say, subtle change. What the edit item template renders, for instance, is, well, first the panel that has a grouping text. And there we use the good old syntax, item.productName. That's read-only data binding. But then we have these text boxes where we display like the product name, the unit price, and the product URL. Well, not only do we want to move these values in the text box, but when later we say save the changes, we have to get the values out. Or I should actually say the model binding system has to get the values out of them. And that's why instead of using the bind, I use here the bind item, strongly typed element that is provided there for you, because bind item is used when you want to do two-way data binding. Like this, the template just continues. At the bottom, you have an update button. There is a validation summary for later to display actual error messages. Before I can actually hook this up, we have to tell the product grids that we can select an item. Auto-generate the select button is set to true. And we still have to tell our form view product how he has to retrieve the product object that we would like to bind against. Well, it's exactly the same thing as I did before. The form view product has the select method where we say, like, please call me get product, no S. One single product will be retrieved. And let me add one more thing. Data key names is product ID. Did I add that in the grids? Yep, that I did add there. And then this method still has to be implemented. If I go to my CodeBee site file, product aspx.cs, and quickly say like public, and this one will return a single product. If you could say a product at all. If you select product, get products. And how do we identify a product? Well, the key is the product ID, and that's an integer, so int product ID. And I just quickly need to say, like, Northwind context CTX is equal to new Northwind context. And then on the context, we had the products, where we now have the find method to say, give me this object that is identified by this particular key. And And that key will be here that product ID. And then we can just basically return that product object. If for whatever reason he would not find it and would return a null product, automatically the empty data template, which I had at the bottom, will be displayed, built. And then if I now request the page again, somewhere an error. Yep, indeed. Well, what I did, wrote nullable, I should have done, first of all, the same thing in here. Did I compile? And no filtering, no. But if I say select me here, this product called PhiloMix. Let's see. And still. Get product, product ID, find. That's fine. Just say like, check then two lines, product P. And then return this one. And anybody any idea what I forgot? Because you could say, where is that value of the product ID coming from? Where does he have to retrieve it? Was a little bit too hasty, because you actually have to say, well, you have to look at whatever we selected in the grid, and there we need to inject the product ID of the selected item in this parameter product ID. So we say, like, again, a control attribute, and I have to look up the name of the grid. And let's go back. Roll product.aspx, and my grid is called here products grid. And there we go. And normally I don't even think I need this anymore. And let's give it another shot. Now it must be a thought could go without built. And then request. And if I now say select, well, because I did add the control attribute, he knows that he has to retrieve the ID, the product ID of the selected item to do this. Now, like I said, ultimately I would like to update something. If you say, well, here, this product called guide host, change it and then hit the update button. Well, you see, he says, well, I don't know how to do any updates because you never told me so. These templated controls, they not only have that method, a select method, but in case you need all three of them, you can say, well, what is the update method that he should run every time an update is to be done? This is the one I need, in case you also want him to tell how to do inserts, insert methods, and in case you want him to tell how to do deletes, well, you can call the delete method. So here, I'm just going to say update product. That's the method you have to use. And then in the code behind itself, well, yet another method, public. Void update product. And here you have a couple of possibilities to implement this. Because what are we updating? Yeah, the product object. So you could say, I'll define a parameter of data type product here, P. I'll create my Northwind context again. And my context has this entry method to say, like, take me this new product object called P, and basically set the state of this one to entry. It is CTX entry. The entry. Set me the state of this product object. To like modified. And then once that is finished, well, I can just, I say, like, save my changes. Let's say doing that implementation will work, but it has some drawbacks. Right? But just to show you that it works, and I did build, and if I go back, well, the first thing is, he should now know if I take Guidehost. No, no. If you click on them itself, he tries to go to Microsoft.com. I have to select them. And then Guidehost, couple of S's, and then the update. And then it's basically updated. Now, you could say, what are the downsides? Well, in terms of what SQL Server now did, is basically the model binding system, based on my expressions I wrote in the edit template, set product ID. A product has an ID, a name, a unit price, a URL. I have these data binding expressions for these, and he basically took the content of the necessary text boxes and bound it to the product object itself. Meaning that if I would put a breakpoint here, and if I would say perform session, and then let's make this the default one, and run. And that basically, if I say select, and if I make a change, well, that update method is called, and the model binding system, using my expressions I wrote in the ASPX file, said, yeah, that product is discontinued is false, product ID 52, and there's the change. We have our product URL and 7. The downside is, you could say, well, what if on your form you do not display all the fields? Well, then some of them will be empty on the product objects. You could also say in here you mark that object as being modified, but he has no knowledge about what the original values were. So if you would trace the SQL statement, it would actually say something like update dbo.products sets and then product name equal to maybe a new value, comma, unit price, maybe to a new value, product URL, maybe equal to a new value. So we basically overwrite the value of every single field except the primary key field. And maybe we only changed one, like the name of the product. So to make this a little bit better, you could actually say, well, what are we going to let the model system pass in? Well, just the ID of the product, int product ID. And at that moment in time, again, I could say, well, SQL Server, and that's then the downside, please retrieve me the products that we are going to update in a moment. So ctx.products.find, and we pass in the product ID. And now we're going to ask the model binding system to explicitly do the model binding, where in your page object, you now have a new method that is called try update model. And it says, well, which model would I like to update? Well, that product model. If it succeeds, but error handling is for later, but if it succeeds, it actually returns a Boolean value, like success. It returns true, otherwise it returns false. And then again, he has the existing product as it is in SQL Server currently. The model binding says, well, what do I have in the form? And he binds it to it. And then the object, the product object itself knows which columns have their value changed, or for which columns did the value not change. And we actually get a much better where class that will actually only update those fields in SQL Server that were actually changed. So if I put a breakpoint here, well, the end result will be basically the same. But if I take here my guide host, get rid of the S's, and say, like, update this, well, he passed in the ID. We are going to talk to SQL Server and say, please give me that particular product object with the, how you could say, original values as it still is in SQL Server. And then we can say try update model, again based on my data binding expressions in that template. He's going to try and update the product model. If we look right now, you see it has been changed, but you only see like what is called the current values there. Behind the scenes, he knows it's product name and only product name that got changed. And then I just F10 and save the changes. Let's stop.
Okay.
So, well, maybe. So if you want to like update the data, you could say a first approach that I did was I wrote my method update product, just taking the whole product as a parameter. But the downside, yeah, what if you're only a subset of fields? What about relationships? He doesn't know what fields actually got updated. He will just update everything, period. And then with that second approach where you first fetch the product object and then say try update model, well, there he knows what fields are updated, and the SQL statement looks a lot better than what we had in the past. And you could say, well, what about validation? What if certain of these fields can only contain certain values? Well, these attributes, again, are not new. Originally, like in ASP.NET dynamic data, later we had them in Silverlight, in WPF. But now, in Windows Forms, you can basically annotate your product class with these data annotation attributes, saying like, look, this field is actually required, and optionally provide what the actual error message should be that he needs to display. You could say, well, maybe maybe the max length should be set to like, let's say like 30. The unit price, again, might be required. And the range should be set between like 1 and, let's say, 1,000. There we go. Oh, and if I write them there, either you be consistent. And same thing, I could say for the product URL, it is required. There we go. And Boolean, it is required. At that moment in time when the model binding is taking place, you could say it's actually going to look at these attributes. In ASP.NET 4.5, there are some more attributes, validation attributes filled in, like for credit cards validation and so on. But he's going to look at these validation attributes, and if the values that he's trying to bind to the model are basically not correct, he's going to generate errors, not exceptions, but errors. And, of course, you want to display these model validation errors. And what Microsoft did do there, where is my products.aspx? And at the bottom, I already have a validation summary and to say, well, hey, display me all the errors. Because now you have the regular ASP.NET validation errors, but you also have model validation errors. Well, you can actually say, like, show me the model state errors and set that one to true. And if I would give this a first try, again, I'm just going to request the page again. We'll do it like this. And then that unit price will make it a little bit ridiculous high and update. You see like entity validation errors property for more information. Why this? Well, model of the validation model kicked in, he generated errors, and I still try to do the save, because that's basically what he says, well, hey, you can't save, you have validation errors hanging around. So you have to, add some little bit extra code in here. First thing that I could do, well, the try update model in this case has returned false. So I could say, well, yeah, if it is not false, or if it's if success is true, then and only then will we do this. But in the page itself, in a form, we also have the model state property. And this one also has a property called isValid, where we can say, well, please only do me this save if the whole model binding system was successfully. Let's compile this. And let's give it another try. And if you select this one, let's just ridiculous high price and update, and then you see no exception anymore. The model state has of is not valid, and because of the summary control I set, you display the model state errors. The field unit price must be between this and this range. If I correct it, let's say like 7, I get rid of the phylomix and update. Well, then the model state did not contain any errors, and the update went basically true. Let's say in terms of what you could add for like custom validation, well, you already saw that you have here in the page the model state, and in case you say, well, I would like to write some custom validation code, well, the model state, you could say, has methods. Like, well, add me a model error, where you could say, well, look, because I checked a certain rule in here, well, this particular control contains an invalid value. If I take this particular value, I can actually then specify here the error message you would like to display in the validation summary, for instance. Another way of working is, well, if I go back to my product class, well, you have these validation attributes built in. And like you can extend them in the other environments, like ASP.NET Dynamic Data, well, equally well, we can extend them in here. If you would say, like, it's a very simple example, but an URL that I use for my products must start with www.microsoft.com, for instance. And I want to write that myself. Well, a custom validator is basically just an attribute that you need to write in which you implement your custom validation logic. And so if I right-click, let's say one more class, let's stupidly call this substring validator attributes.cs substring validator. Yep. And again, there, it's a little bit lengthy code, but I have a small code snippet where, let's say, it was called the custom validator snippet, and where basically we have our public class contains substring attribute. The only thing I still need to add is that it must inherit from the, is it validation attribute base class resolve. Yep. And then basically you write your own custom validation code. My attribute has one string parameter, like what is the string I would like to check for. And the most important thing is that you overwrite the isValid method, because there you're going to check what is the value that we get in and for which we would like to do the validation. And we get in that value as an object. So the first thing that happens, it's converted into a date, to a string. And then basically, I will check if our product name contains that substring that is here passed in. If the product name contains that substring, well, then we will return success, validation result with success in there. Otherwise, if it's not valid, well, at that moment in time, we just return the error string. Field name does not contain that substring str. Now, let me put a breakpoint here, and let me take the attribute and place it here on the product URL, where you say, well, hey, it must contain the substring http://www data.microsoft and then something. And close this, build. And if I start debugging this, and select like PhiloMix, and here you have like 1, 2, 3, 4 W's in it. You know, it's a like price of 7, and then update. Well, yep, F10, find, and then try update model. And this try update model is going to look at all the validation attributes I have on my product. One of them was that contains substring. And what I still wanted to show you there, so he passes in here in that value, well, my parameter that I'm validating, that www.microsoft.com. He also passes you in the validation context. Because you could say, well, what if I want to get hold of the whole product object for which I'm running the validation? Well, that validation context has, for instance, a property called object instance, which references the whole product object model that I'm validating. You have here like the display name that you can ask for, like the product URL. That's the field on which the attribute was placed that we are currently validating. So if we just trace through it again, and again, my data, that's the value I am validating, the string is the rule and the parameter of the attribute. This is definitely not valid. You could say F10, and then we return a wrong validation result. Oops. And then should still see my error. Let me get rid of the attribute. Update. One more update. Yeah. So product URL does not contain the string www.microsoft.com. You could say you have the built-in data annotation attributes that have been extended in 4.5. And if you want to write your own validation attributes, you just write a class that inherits from the validation attribute class, and you implement the isValid, implement your own custom validation logic in there. And that's, you could say, what I took with the model binding of ASP.NET MVC and then like backported it into web forms. So there you now have the choice whether or not you use it. So any more questions? No. If not, it's almost time to have to go for time for lunch. So I'll leave you. Thank you for your attention.